personal foul. Unsportsmanlike conduct.
Astree tackled the quarterback. He's giving him business down there. That's a 15-yard penalty.
Welcome back, Unsportsmanlike Conduct podcast, and a happy episode for those of you in the area that are Colorado Avalanche fans.
Yoo-hoo!
They finally did it, Dal. They finally stopped being the perennial regular season powerhouse playoff chokers, and well, they shrugged it off and said, "Wait a minute, what if we just stayed good at hockey?"
It was kind of neat because the whole Nathan MacKinnon thing, obviously, in last year. Let's be honest, last year was like just a huge disappointment for Rockies fans. They got escorted out of the playoffs really early, and what did he say? "I've been playing 9 years and I haven't won Schmidt." And so all the memes now are like, "Nathan MacKinnon, you've now won Schmidt." So it was kind of cool. But I'll tell you what, the urgency of that third period in game six.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Lightning didn't even have a shot on goal until there was like less than 3 minutes. And then like they pulled the goalie and, you know, it kind of turned into a fracas. But seriously, I mean, they were not even getting a look at, which is incredible when you think about it. I mean, look who's on that team.
Mm-hmm.
But the Avalanche, when they were clicking, they were the best team in hockey, and they were able to prove it this year.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, some of that defense coming up clutch in key moments throughout the postseason probably is what helped lead to Cal Makar being named the Conn Smythe winner, most valuable player throughout the playoffs.
Yeah, supposedly the first one to ever win all of the trophies.
Mm-hmm.
in one season like that. And then
Duncan Keith came close, but his Conn Smythe came not in the year he won the Norris.
And then someone pointed out that two teams passed on Cale Makar.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they feel stupid. Whoever they are. I don't know who they are. But it was a fun run for the Avalanche. Joe Sakic, you know, he was a legend anyway, but once you've won titles as a player and a general man, you know, as a front mm-hmm. office guy, you know, it's kind of interesting because Denver has a couple of those guys. You got him and, you know, John Elway's done it for the Broncos, even though he's an idiot, doesn't even know what he's doing.
He backpedals his way into GM.
He lucked into Peyton Manning, let's just be honest.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a short list.
Oh, so, yeah.
You know what makes me even a bigger jerk? I know from doing our morning show, it's actually John Elway's birthday today.
What a way to celebrate.
You suck. Just kidding.
Happy birthmas.
You suck. Odds on. So someone brought up this point on my Twitter feed. They said, okay, now the Broncos and the Avalanche each have 3 championships. Which one of them gets their 4th? First,
Colorado's in a better position to do it if it's going to happen in the next 5 years. And I know Denver just did all that to, you know, oh, we got Russell Wilson. Oh, we got, look at this. We're making a big play. They still might be the 3rd best team in their division.
Or 4th. Who knows? Yeah, that division, that and the AFC West is going to be an absolute dogfight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. I think the Avalanche are, you know, they've got some free agents to take care of. Also, kind of a cool thing, Nassim Kadri, first Muslim player to ever win the Stanley Cup.
So they announced that on NHL's social media page, and I went to college and high school in St. Louis, and because he's the player that ran into Jordan Binnington, I was really enjoying the amount of salty comments coming from all the people I used to know from St. Louis. Oh, yeah, Kadri is a piece of crap, blah, blah, blah. I hate Kadri, Kadri. Well, you know what? Kadri's a Stanley Cup champion now.
Yeah.
Jordan Binnington won one 3 years ago.
Something else I saw that was interesting. Of course, the Avalanche damaged the cup before they even got it off the ice.
I did see that.
And there's a great picture where like two of them, MacKinnon and I can't remember who the other one, like they realize it and they're just like, oh my gosh, we hurt the cup. And like it's like they're taking the big team picture. And then obviously, you know, they're drinking beer and stuff out of mm-hmm. it. What was interesting is today, MacKinnon had the cup
mm-hmm.
And his little girl, who is almost the exact same height as the cup, was drinking out of it. And I thought to myself, that brings up an interesting thing, because, I mean, all manner of things have been done to and out of the Stanley Cup. And it makes me think, do you sanitize that?
I'm guessing he disinfected that.
Do you wash it?
Good.
I mean, it is, I'm assuming it's silver, so that, you know, it's just, anyway, it got me thinking, yeah, I don't think you want to drink right out of that, right after the entire NHL hockey team has been doing whatever they've been doing with it.
I remember Jonathan Toews got the Stanley Cup after 2015 first, because he was the captain. So he took a picture of himself the next morning. He made himself a giant bowl of Trix cereal.
That's what I would do, except it'd be Captain Crunch. I would totally eat Captain Crunch out of it.
I still think, though, that no one in my lifetime has topped the Capitals' Alex Ovechkin's nonsense parade with the Stanley Cup. Like, no human being that has ever won anything was evidently as excited about it as Ovechkin was to win that cup. I mean, from the being held upside down while his face was plunked into the cup, which was filled with champagne, and he had to suck the he had to drink all the champagne or risk drowning himself, and he was like, yeah, let's do it. Like,
what? He does.
They're refusing to let it go so that his teammates could touch it on the ice for a little bit.
He does seem to be very attached, which, you know, based on the fact that they haven't been back since, it's a good thing he celebrated so hardy with it.
Oh, yeah.
Then did you actually see, I guess he played soccer for some team recently. And he plays soccer like he plays hockey.
That's fantastic.
These guys would come up to check him, and he would just run them over, and they'd go fly and bounce. He actually even scored a goal. I don't know what level this was, but it looked kind of comical when they were showing him, because the one guy that came up to check him, it looked like a small child was coming up to check him, and it's like, well, that's not going to work. I guess I didn't realize Alex Ovechkin was that big.
Oh, Alex Ovechkin's a monster.
So, anyway, it was pretty funny. But I'm excited. I'm going to get me an Avs jersey, maybe. I said that, and then I went and looked. I immediately went shopping and saw how much they were.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, where's the half-price jersey? It's like, well, they're not going to be half-price today, Dal. You know, right after they win the Stanley Cup. It's like they're going to have left.
You know how hard
extra
it was?
Small, and they're going to be $200.
You know how hard it was for me to get my Joe Burrow jersey after the Bengals won the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe I'll have to wait. But cool stuff. Cool stuff. Mm-hmm. It was fun. Now you just saw some breaking news.
Oh, your Commanders.
And I have not seen it yet, so I'm actually literally learning this from you.
Let's see who reported it here, but Terry McLaurin, this is according to Ian Rapoport, the Commanders and star wide receiver Terry McLaurin have agreed to terms on a 3-year deal worth $23.3 million per year.
What's interesting is I'm a longtime Washington fan, and I'm still getting used to the Commanders name, honestly, so give me a break.
Burrow says that he knew that it was only a temporary name, but after he got used to it, he wishes that they just stuck with football team.
Honestly, my brother's that way. He's a fan, and he's like, I liked football team. We'd call them the WFT, and then when they sucked, we'd call them the WTFs. But I have, more than anything else on my Twitter feed, a lot of hand-wringing Washington fans, supposedly, and they have been stressing over this for weeks and months, acting like it wasn't going to happen. I was never worried. I was never worried that they were going to get the extension done on Terry McLaurin, but they are the Washington franchise. They are still owned by Dan Snyder. And they are built on an ancient Indian burial ground or something.
For however
right
much
now.
Longer Dan Snyder is going to be owned.
Please let it be short. But anyway, I still was very confident this was going to get done. And I'll be honest, what's interesting is, had they got the extension done before this offseason, mm-hmm. probably would have saved him some money. Because starting with Christian Kirk, they wrecked the wide receiver market this offseason. Tyreek Hill's making $30 million. Everything was what went through the roof for receivers. But I was pointing this out to you as you told me that this was just happening,
mm-hmm.
that McLaurin, his numbers, he's had 3 straight 1,000-yard seasons, hasn't had as many touchdowns as you would hope, but that's Washington's fault, not his. But you look at who's been throwing him the ball since he came into the league. I mean, it's pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so for him to have put up those numbers with the people that he had thrown him the ball is pretty amazing. And so my point was he had completely outperformed his rookie contract. So Washington owed him money anyway. They owed him back money. So you can say it's $23.5 million per year, but it's really more like $19 million a year because we owed him several million for how well he played with the poo-poo platter of quarterbacks mm-hmm. we had up until. So I am really hoping now what's been kind of fun is it seems like Jahan Dotson really made some strides in their camp and created some rapport with Carson Wentz. I'm genuinely excited about that duo now.
Well, Dotson was incredible at Penn State, just so we're all clear on that.
He looks completely ready for the NFL.
I called him Tyreek Hill 2 on this podcast. So we'll see if he ever lives up to that. But, you know, just so we're clear, he's had my stamp of approval.
Well, he did nothing in the mini camp other than just make people go, wow, this guy's ready. And so if you got McLaurin, you got him. Word is that Dynami Brown is better. I thought he was a total disappointment to me last year. You'll have the tight end back. You got J.D. McKissick back. That offense has the potential, I'm going to say potential, to be very good. And I have that right to say that because it's the off season. So
you can't prove me wrong for at least 3 more months.
Anyway, I'm tickled to death they got McLaurin done. He's the face of that franchise, at least on the offensive side of the ball. Jonathan Allen on the defensive side, and so yeah. And speaking of Commanders, I think they've got the best looking helmet. Seriously. That matte burgundy helmet is awesome.
I can't. Because the best two helmets in football, and this is objective, by the way. This is not an opinion.
The Bears.
No.
Oh.
No. I do love the Bears uniform, but I am a fan of navy blue. So that's just a personal thing. But totally not subjective. This is just fact, okay? It can't be argued. The Saints and the Raiders have the two best helmets in professional football.
Saints.
Oh, the gold? With the black Florida Lee on there. Gold, first of all, always looks great in a... Now, this is weird. I hate yellow. Yellow in a sport uniform is ugly to me, but gold looks so beautiful.
Well, you're
sorry,
talking,
Wyoming fan.
You're talking to the wrong guy, and we refer to that as game day gold. Thank you.
You shouldn't.
Well...
Let me just say that when...
I'll also just say, being from Wyoming, we don't care what you think.
Listen, my...
Stuff it. Right up your stuff hole. We don't care.
My big city Chicago opinion is always valued by the fine people of Wyoming.
What's funny is you can actually find that sign like at the DMV. Like in Wyoming. Like it'll be like, welcome to Wyoming. We don't care how you did it where you came from. That's at the DMV.
I still haven't forgiven whoever's in charge of the Saints uniforms for switching like 4 or 5 years ago to black pants.
Yeah, they went overboard with the black.
I'm sorry, and maybe other people disagree. Whether you think they're number one or not, no one should argue that the Saints, gold helmet, black jersey, gold pants. It was my favorite uniform in any sport.
Hmm.
All of them. Gold and black combined, like, come on, that looks sweet.
Yeah, I struggle because that's basically the Colorado Buffaloes, and I hate them.
Oh, my old college coach, shout out to Coach B, he was a wide receiver at Colorado.
Well.
Yeah, so you and him could fight about it or something.
Yeah, I'm sure I do really well.
He was just a wide receiver.
Yeah, at a D1 school. But anyway, the Washington helmets, though, you have to admit, those things are cool. Those are sharp.
Those are pretty nice.
Anyway, I'm excited.
I really, for some reason, though, I just like the way silver or gold look. Particularly on a football helmet. Whatever that shine, that sparkle is that it gives off. That's nice. Except for whatever Jacksonville did, where it looks like they sandpapered their helmet.
Not only
that. What is it made of?
Not only that. Let's just be honest. Teal is a crap color.
It is, but that's not even on their helmet.
It's like the fourth choice of a bridesmaid dress.
Because their helmet is the Dennis Rodman. It's black in the back, but it's gold in the front for some reason. And the gold doesn't have any shine. There's no sparkle.
Well, and there's like no gradient to it. It's like split in half. It doesn't blend at all.
And I think the Vikings went to those helmets too that the Jaguars wear. The ones where like the purple used to have like shine to it.
Yeah,
like
now it's matte.
Yeah.
I like the matte. I don't. And see, that's what Washington's burgundy ones are. They're matte burgundy.
Oh, see, I kind of like... They look like they're made out of chalkboard.
No, see, I like I like the matte. But the Jaguars, yeah, like they had one...
I like to see reflections in the helmet.
Theirs is like half black and half gold or what...
It's hideous.
It's ugly.
My brother loves them for some reason because he's clearly no professional and his opinion is bad and he should feel bad.
My wife used to cheer for him because... In December, their midfield logo, the Jaguar, would have a Santa hat on it. That was her complete reasoning for liking the Jaguars. That was it.
To be fair, we still he won't confirm for us that it's just because they're cats. But my brother, so he's a Bears fan. But like, if you were to ask him, hey, rank any team after that you like, the Bengals have always been his second favorite team. The Panthers is third, and the Jaguars the fourth. And he keeps telling me, oh, I just like all their uniforms. Their uniforms are cool. I'm like, their uniforms? What is Jacksonville doing in that top four then? Their uniforms are hideous.
So going back to this, Terry McLaurin, 3-year extension, $28 million signing bonus. The extension is worth up to $71 million, which according to Adam Schefter puts him in the top five highest paid wide receivers. Which I'm sure was part of the discussion. It's like, hey, because when these agents show up, that's seriously the language they use.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, hey, top five receiver, top five money, blah, blah, blah. And so I'm sure that was part of it. But
would you say Terry McLaurin is a top five wide receiver right now?
Here's the thing. I think that he could be. But as I've pointed out, he has put up Pro Bowl... at least comparable numbers.
Here's where
guys that aren't even in the league anymore.
True. Here's where I always have this discussion with people, because people will throw around the term top five and top 10 like for free. And here's where it's not a substitute for the word elite. If he's an elite receiver, that's fine. Top five insinuates that there can only be five right. In the top five.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So you can't give eight people a top five.
Well, let's just throw it out there. So number one, at least right now, has got to be Cooper Kupp.
I'd say, and I think this year he's got a guy that's going to pass him. I won't give it to him yet because he only played 1 year, but I really think Ja'Marr Chase is that good. I think Ja'Marr Chase is going to be the number one receiver in football for the next decade.
And then you got Tyreek Hill, of course. Who
I'd put Davante Adams as my three. Davante
Adams.
Tyreek Hill. If he's healthy, DeAndre Hopkins is still lurking around out there.
Yeah. So if you're being technical...
Yeah, maybe he's...
He's probably not top five.
Yeah, maybe he's the seventh or the eighth best receiver.
But I also believe that with Carson Wentz and with the offense he's going to be in, could he put up top five numbers? Yes, I think he could this year.
Potentially.
So at least I have belief that he could.
You got to, of course, put Darnell Mooney in the top five.
No.
Oh, okay, my bad.
But this... I guess what I'm saying is you look at McLaurin's numbers, and he's done that with zero deep threat. Zero. He's done that without a quarterback who can throw the ball 50 yards in the air.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't had one.
He does now.
Yeah, he does now.
Now, sometimes he'll throw the ball to the wrong team. But Wentz,
you know,
when Wentz is on, and you've been a noted Carson Wentz hater to this
I point. Was, but I've warmed up to him since they've signed him.
I remember 2017 Carson Wentz, and there's a part of me that can't shake him out of my brain. Like, that Carson Wentz was genuinely, at times, literally unstoppable that year.
Well, you know who he kind of reminded me of before he got in the league is Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't shouldn't surprise us because they were recruited by the same man in college. Brent Vegan recruited Carson Wentz at North Dakota State. He recruited Josh Allen at Wyoming. And they're both big, strong-armed, confident guys. They're kind of gunslingers. I think Carson Wentz has had a more checkered injury history, obviously.
I think Josh Allen developed better, too. I think Wentz...
And he might have gone to a better place.
That's what... Yeah, that's part of it. He developed better. Josh Allen has been 2017 Carson Wentz. If 2017 Carson Wentz stayed exactly like that and never fell off.
So I guess what I'm saying is even his numbers last year with the Colts...
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
they were okay.
I think he had like 20, 25, 29 touchdowns, only 9 picks. I mean, I will take that.
They were okay. Yeah, they were.
So, and I think Washington has some weapons for him to use. So anyway, I guess what I'm saying is Terry McLaurin a top 5? Maybe not, but I think he could be.
Semantics. But yes, that was just my pet peeve of the day. People using that and a meme that ESPN posted on Twitter the other day called Goats Only Club, and it was a little cartoon, and it said, for players 35 plus still bringing it, but it says GOATS, that stands for greatest of all time, of which there can be one, because it's the greatest, the best, and they had two quarterbacks sitting in the room, they had 3 tennis players, 2 soccer players, I'm like, no, only one of those should be in here if this is, quote, now, the greatest of all time.
You're saying like one per sport.
Well, Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady cannot possibly both be the GOAT.
I agree.
You got to pick one.
Mainly because Aaron Rodgers is not the GOAT.
Not even close, but for some reason people really like, look, he can roll to his left and throw ball 50 yards.
I'm not saying he's not a really good quarterback. He is, obviously. I know that hurts you to hear that. But I
know he's a really good quarterback.
But if you're talking, seriously, if we're having the greatest of all time discussion, that argument stopped when the Patriots won their last ring with Brady. Maybe even the second to last. It was over. It's his. He's still putting up 5,000 yards a season. He won another Super Bowl with Tampa Bay. It's over.
Yeah.
The only other argument you could make is it's based on opinion. Like prototypical, you know, arm strength, quick release quarterback.
But then ESPN still needs to pick one because they're the one that put the word GOAT in their cartoon.
No, you're totally right. You're totally right. But I'm saying
even if they pick a stupid one, if they went, hey, let's put I don't know. Look, it's Eli Manning. It's still got to be one, whether you're right, wrong, or whatever. No, it's got to be one. That's how the English language works.
I'm with you. But it was never Aaron Rodgers. It was even at that point, it was like between Brady and Joe Montana or Dan Marino.
I say that.
Which Dan Marino's in that conversation with no championships.
I'll say this. Depending on your outlook, I only accept 4 answers. If you name anyone else, then that quarterback falls into one of these 4 categories and he sits behind one of these 4 guys. Tom Brady is an acceptable answer. He's won everywhere he's gone. He's the most competitively driven quarterback of all time.
His numbers are ridiculous. Number of championships won, number of Super Bowls played in.
Mm-hmm.
Career yardage, career touchdowns, ridiculous.
Ridiculous. And then there's people, though, and I used to be one of them, you know, the whole, well, it's a team sport, literally disqualify it, which is odd because, like, yes, it's not the fact that he won 7 Super Bowls. I don't actually care about that as a number. Because, yes, the Tampa Bay and New England defense helped win. The running back helped win. The wide receiver helped win. The coach helped. Everyone chipped in. They all won. It's what did Brady do in his own bubble to lead to that? What did Brady contribute? And Tom Brady, in those playoff games, contributed as best as anyone could have contributed. He led the team. He's acceptable.
Yeah.
But if you literally like, you know what? I'm of the opinion, disqualify it. None of that counts. It's just what did they do? I like numbers. Give me numbers. What... I will accept Peyton Manning. if that's your opinion.
I think Peyton Manning's a perfectly acceptable argument there. And again, I'll throw this out there. I think Dan Marino is a perfectly acceptable argument.
I still think that if you're going to pick Dan Marino, I'm going to default it back up to Man. No, I'm saying, if you're going to tell me...
But it's acceptable to argue.
He's not on my four, so I'm going to be consistent here and at least yell at the Dan Marino then. If you're going to pick Dan Marino, I'm going to default it and say, well, no, now you're wrong, because if you like Marino, then you have to default to Manning, because Manning was the better version of Dan Marino. Third acceptable answer, because of the era difference, and if you're this guy and your argument, wrong as it is, in my opinion, but I'll accept it because at least you can defend it. You say, well, I care about championship performance.
Terry Bradshaw.
No, it's Joe Montana.
Oh, yeah, Joe Montana.
Joe Montana never threw an interception in a championship game. Ever.
Well, there's still people that think he's the best.
He has a near perfect quarterback rating in Super Bowls. That's almost impossible. And on top of that, I actually broke this down for a school project in college once. I'm so thankful that it was an open, it could be any category we wanted for this essay project. I broke down who's the greatest quarterback of all time. Sorry, who's the greatest Super Bowl performer? Between three quarterbacks, often argued as the GOAT, and they're the three I've mentioned thus far. I do have a fourth acceptable answer coming up. Don't worry. And I compared their performances, Joe Montana, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning. And as much as Tom Brady is really good in the playoffs and really good in the Super Bowl, Joe Montana is actually technically a better Super Bowl, specifically performer, than Brady was. Joe Montana never played in his four Super Bowls. He played a top 10 defense in all four of them. That's insane to me. If you then look at the fact that he threw four touchdowns in one. I'm going off the top of my head, so some of these might be a little off. Four touchdowns in one, two touchdowns in one, one touchdown in one, and I want to say five touchdowns in the other, all without ever throwing an interception, throwing for 300 plus yards in almost all of them. And he did all of this against four, including that remember the team he shellacked 55-10, yeah, that Broncos Denver team? That was the number one defense in football in 1988
or 87? The Orange Crush defense.
You would never think that. Sorry, not 87. I went the wrong direction. It was 89. You would never remember that that Broncos defense was number one in the league based on the fact that we all remember them as the team that got shellacked for 55 points in the Super Bowl.
I look at the Redskins, arguably one of their best offenses ever was the year after they won the Super Bowl with Joe Theismann, and they went back and then they got crushed by the Raiders. And they only scored like 13 points.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no one remembers them as being...
So if that's your deal, if you're like, I only care about championship performance for some reason.
Yeah.
I'm the three guys on Earth.
So who's your fourth guy?
So my fourth guy, by the way, for those of you that pick Aaron Rodgers, I'm defaulting you to Peyton Manning.
Well, you should have already known that you weren't going to have Aaron Rodgers.
Peyton Manning is better than Aaron Rodgers. So, and they fall into the same category. Fourth guy, and this is because of the 1978 rule changes, he is... For that reason, eternally in the discussion. Like, he can't be erased, because anything anyone does after 1978, someone can make the argument, well, yeah, pass interference exists now. Offensive holding is now, you know, like back before 78, the rule was the offensive line, when performing a block, must have the hands located inside their elbows. That was the rule. So if your hand came outside your elbow, you were holding. They changed that to make offense so that quarterbacks would be more protected. So the pre-1978 greatest quarterback of all time, Johnny Unitas.
Okay.
Who, by the way, once had a 4,000-yard, 36-touchdown pass season with single-digit interceptions pre-1978. In a 12-game season.
Yeah, that is pretty ridiculous.
That's nuts. And yet, his numbers will never, ever stack up to these guys that play now. But I have to allow him in this discussion every time because of, obviously, the 78 rule changes changed football. The position of quarterback is changed forever. Now it's a quarterback league. So those are the four. If you say, now Tom Brady's probably the correct answer to me, but I will let you skate by without argument if you then say, actually, I think it's Manning, Montana, or Unitas. Those are the four acceptable answers to me.
Man. Well, I'm not even going to argue. You've got a school project here.
I do. Hey, I got an A on that.
Well, I can see why. Here's some more breaking news. Just happened.
Oh, we got more.
This is in our footprint. The Utah Jazz apparently are finalizing a deal to make Boston Celtics assistant coach Will Hardy their new head coach. He would replace Quinn Snyder, who was the head coach for the Jazz for 8 seasons. They wanted him back. Snyder felt like he'd kind of run his course there in Salt Lake City, so he stepped away with a couple years left on his contract. But now Tim McMahon is saying this is a done deal. Hardy will be the youngest coach, active coach in the NBA at 34. So it's kind of one of those things where when Snyder left, he said he felt like it would be the best thing for the team. And there was kind of some discussion. It's like, well, you know, when, especially in like the NBA, you see it, baseball a lot. The coaches, their voices just kind of turn into background noise with players. The sense of urgency is no longer there. There's nothing it's not fresh enough to keep them motivated. You almost get the impression the Jazz are making this move going, this guy is going to relate to these players better than Snyder did. At least that's their hope. But I'll tell you what, we had Jeremiah Jansen on here from KSL last weekend for Sports Friday, last Friday. And he flat out said the odds of the Jazz finding a coach as good as Quinn Snyder were slim. Like, just, I mean, and maybe they will. Maybe they did, or they are. But there's expectations in Utah. There's not like, oh, come in and not lose. You know, come in and hopefully win more than you lose. They're the kings of that. They do that all the time. They need to win in the postseason. That's where the Utah, they've been that way for 20 plus. They were that way even when Stockton and Malone were there, but they did finally make the finals a couple of times. But that's a fan base that wants a championship, and we'll see if Will Hardy's the guy. According to this, he was there with the Celtics for 1 year. He played Division III Williams College, started his career as a video coordinator for the Spurs. I like guys like that. You want to know why? It's just like the coach of the Avs. Bednar, like he has, they said he's the first coach to have like all these different championships from the minor leagues. And this, he's been there, man. He is grounded out. This is a guy who probably started getting paid to coach hockey for like food, stuff like that. You know, the clothes all his kids wear was free stuff from the team, you know, things like that. And then you finally win the Stanley. It's kind of like the coach of the Bucks a couple years ago. Same thing there. You know, he was a G League coach and won that championship. There's a pattern in professional sports. You're seeing this more and more. They're giving these guys chances because they're hungry. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I look at this guy. Maybe he'll be able to communicate with these players to the point where it's like, we need more urgency out of you guys, more consistency. But we'll see what happens. Are they still going to keep Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert? When Jeremiah was on, he basically said there's no way that's happening. So we'll see how it happens. But Will Hardy going to be the new Jazz coach.
And speaking of some NBA news, it was released by several Chicago area reporters. You're a Bulls fan as well. The Chicago Bulls are expected to offer, and it is expected to be agreed to, Zach LaVine.
Max money?
A 5-year, $212 million contract. Boy. Is Zach LaVine worth that?
No.
No.
And the only reason I'll say that is because Michael Jordan was making $30 million a year. Of course, with inflation, maybe it's more like $50. But that's what you're talking about here. Mm-hmm. You're talking, I like Zach LaVine. I really do. I like him. I want him to stay.
I don't think but that we're holy, a championship team if Zach LaVine is holy, your best player.
But holy crap, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily, it's not my money. It's not your money. But it's that whole cap thing. It's like you're going to... So here's a prime example. This just happened as well. So Russell Westbrook... Let me make sure I'm getting the name right here. because I've been reading about John Wall and Russell Westbrook and all these guys, but yeah, Westbrook. So Westbrook, who had maybe the worst season of his career, but he is going to pick up, of course you are, the $47 million option to stay with the team. It's like, well, of course you are. And that's what happens at the end of these mega contracts. Mm-hmm. Either somebody picks you up and they eat it from a different team than you originally signed it for, or the team that you signed with eats it. But at some point, someone's going to be paying Zach LaVine $47 million 5 years from now or something like that.
Speaking of, we can go back to hockey. The Arizona Coyotes only this season finally got Marian Hossa off their books, which I find hilarious.
Yeah.
Marian Hossa has been retired since 2016. The Arizona Coyotes have been paying him a salary every year since. Well,
who's the guy, every July 1st he gets $1 million from the Mets? What's his name? It's not Bob. Is it Bobby Bonilla?
I don't remember.
But back in the 90s, it's been like almost 30 years, he deferred his salary because the owner wanted to do something different. And he's like, okay. And it was like one of those, don't ever do this again, professional owners, because now they pay him like $1 million. It's like $1.5 million a year. And it, over the course of his life, he's gotten like $50 million extra dollars from the Mets rather than getting what he was supposed to make back in the day. It's just, anyway, it's like one of those things. I gotta find that. It's driving me nuts. I can't remember if that's the right name or not, but Zach LaVine. I mean, he wasn't even the best player on his team last year.
No.
That was DeMar DeRozan. I don't know. But at the same time, if you're the Bulls, what else are you gonna do? Let him walk and get nothing for him? That's what they do.
Yeah.
So I guess they're gonna give him a shot. So see what happens.
And then we just got to pray he turns into a top five player magically overnight.
He has his moments.
Yeah, we need those to be every single game.
I mean, he is an all-star.
He is that. Is he capable of being the best player on a championship team?
It is Bobby Bonilla. Okay, yeah. So they now refer to it as Bobby Bonilla Day, I think. So, yeah, he last played for the Mets in 1999. He was last in the majors in 2001, but he'll be making money from the Mets until 2035. That is absolutely outstanding. Okay, so here's what happened. In 2000, the Mets agreed to buy out the remaining $5.9 million on Bonilla's contract. Now, Bobby Bonilla, he was a hell of a player. I remember when he was with the Pirates. He was there with Barry Bonds. I mean, that was a hell of a duo. Okay, so instead of paying Bonilla the $5.9 million at the time, the Mets agreed to make annual payments of $1.2 million for 25 years. Why would you do that? Oh, by the way, he also makes 8% interest on this, Aaron. 8% interest on $1.2 million, which is almost $100,000. So at the time, the ownership had invested in a Bernie Madoff account that promised double-digit returns. The Mets were poised to make a significant profit if it had worked. But of course, we now know Bernie Madoff was the king of the hustle. And so, yeah, July 1st, it's coming up, Bobby Bonilla Day. He's going to get another $1.2 million. So he's supposed to get $5.9 million, and instead he's making $1.2 million per year until 2035. Crazy stuff. I'm proud of myself for remembering who it was.
You mentioned the Pirates a second ago. They had a little bit of news from the other day. They have their number one prospect that has become a running meme in the baseball community is O'Neill Cruz, the Dominican second baseman, who has just been destroying minor league baseball for the last 2 years, and everyone has been making fun of the Pirates for, what are the Pirates doing? Why has this man been playing minor league baseball for so long? He'd be the best infielder on your team right now. Call him up! They finally did.
So why hadn't they, do you know?
They're the Pirates.
Okay.
Yeah. the Pirates live in eternal fear of their players becoming good, because then they'd have to pay them.
I have a brother who's a Pirates fan, and he still talks, just kind of looks off in the distance, talking about, seriously, about Bobby Bonilla and Barry Bonds and that era, back when Barry Bonds' head was a normal size.
But O'Neill Cruz got called up. He's now played 8 games. Was doing pretty well, batting .250. Fine. Well, he finally hit his first home run the other day as a major league player after hitting about 1,000 of them in minor leagues this year. They call him up. Everyone says, okay, well, you know, is there that risk that maybe he's not all the hype we thought he would? Well, he hit the thing about 480 feet. He just destroyed his first major league home run.
Wow.
And he threw the bat like he had malice in his heart.
Well,
at his own dugout.
In his head, he's probably like, it's about freaking time.
And, like, you couldn't have wrote that any better. Like, he's literally mad at the Pirates for taking this long to let him come up here and hit this home run.
Well, he's so... So by holding him back, he's already pissed at the Pirates, is what you're saying.
Now, I can't confirm that. I'm not in his head or anything. But, you know, it was funny. He hit a home run, and, I mean, he bat-flipped that thing like he had intent.
Why not?
Yeah.
I would. I've never hit a home run. You just hit one recently.
It almost the exact same thing, Dal.
Yeah. Oh, exactly the same.
I'm sure it went a similar distance.
You hit a softball 480. That's something.
But yeah, so O'Neill Cruz, who I had stashed him in my fantasy league for like 4 weeks at the beginning of the year before I gave up on the fact that I said, all right, I guess the Pirates really are this dumb. They're never going to call him up. So I cut him. Now here he is, and he's hitting 250, and he hit his home run. And I said,
Well, 250 is not great, but
it's not spectacular.
It's going to go
in the modern world of baseball.
It's probably going to go up, though.
There are very few 300 hitters left.
That's true. But what I'm
Although
saying
three
is...
three of them play on the White Sox.
But I guess what I'm saying is he's probably going to get better.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's... I mean, he's still...
He could easily be the best player on the Pirates in 2 years.
Yeah. Would have been 2 years ago, maybe. Maybe that's why he's so mad.
Now, to be fair, he's only 23. So it's not like he's had his whole life wasted or anything, but...
Hey, Kale McCarr's 23, and he won every trophy there is.
I remember... So now Brian, Bowen, your defenseman. Why am I forgetting how his last name is? Anyway, was in the same draft class as when we drafted Kirby Dach in the first round, who's been fine, a fine forward, an okay NHL second line forward. Brian Bowen has been, you know, a key centerpiece of now Stanley Cup championship defense.
You'd have to say Joe Sakic is probably going to win that executive of the year thing.
Potentially. We actually were mocked to take Brian Boehm in like every mock draft because the Blackhawks desperately needed a defenseman at the time. We went with Kirby Dach because of the old... Well, we don't draft for need. We draft best player available. And then he didn't even turn out to be better. What the heck?
What's wrong with you people? All right, what's next, Aaron?
Well, I think we covered all the truly breaking news. The USFL, my breakers, been knocked out.
Oh.
We lost to Birmingham 3 times in 1 year.
That's not good.
Poor Kyle Sloter literally was named the all-USFL quarterback. And it just felt so much like watching Jay Cutler on the Bears all over again. Where, like, yeah, I get why he won it, because he was clearly the most talented of any of the 8 starting quarterbacks. You watched him make plays where you went, whoa, this is a USFL quarterback? How'd he throw the ball 50 yards like that across his body? That's insane. But the problem is, as talented as he was, he'd occasionally get hit with the dum-dum bug, where he'd go, you know what? Maybe I can throw the ball through that middle linebacker to my tight end going across the middle. I think I can throw it that hard. Oh, no, the linebacker caught it. My bad.
So do you think he has a chance at...
Well, he's already been in 29 NFL camps in his career.
Oh, my gosh.
That's the NFL record, by the way. Kyle Sloter has...
Going back to your Feely jersey days, think about what's in the trunk of this
guy's car. His first NFL team he ever... got to go to a mini camp for was the Bears.
But I'm just saying, but imagine this guy's trunk. What's in his trunk?
So I'm trying to think what they said. Kyle Sloter has been in 29. If you only, like, they count that. If you attend a day of practice, they were going to count it. 29 is the record. Kyle Sloter holds it. He has seen action for two teams. He played in the preseason for the Denver Broncos, and he played in the preseason and one regular season game for the Minnesota Vikings. Other than that, the other 27 stops, he was merely a camp arm. I get that. But still, 29 NFL camps.
Hey,
it's more.
Telling you.
That's 29 more than I've ever been to.
If you show up at every camp and you go home with a wad of stuff, you come out ahead. I mean, obviously, you get paid to be there, too. But.
And now he's all USFL quarterback, baby.
Yeah.
That comeback story of the century. It's like Kurt Warner.
Well, there's a quarterback from Wyoming. His name was Casey Bramlett. He was drafted by the Bengals in the 7th round after a career at Wyoming and never appeared in any games. And then remember the World League, or Euro League, whatever, what was it called? The one that was in Europe with all the... anyway, he was the MVP of their championship game. But it was also the last year that league existed. So it didn't really help him out.
I don't know why I thought of this either. But since we're talking about quarterbacks, and we kind of ran out of stories with a little bit of time to kill here, have you heard the story, by the way, that always resurfaces of the gentleman who ended up going on to star in and produce Duck Dynasty?
Yeah.
They all talk about, oh, you know, back in my day, I started over Terry Bradshaw in college. The only reason Terry Bradshaw is famous is because I decided I didn't want to play football anymore. Well, finally, I decided to look into that the other day because I saw someone post it yet again on the old interwebs.
And?
He threw one touchdown to 15 interceptions his final season as a starter. Yes, he was a junior who started over the freshman Terry Bradshaw.
So he's probably been saying it tongue-in-cheek.
It's mostly people like on the internet talk about, you know, he could have been an NFL quarterback. No, he could not have.
You know what this reminds me of?
Terry Bradshaw, by the way, then came in, started the next year, obviously, was the Heisman winner, was named All-American at quarterback, and was the number one overall pick in the draft. So I don't want to hear any more of this whatever Robertson. Oh, you know, he was a better quarterback than Terry Bradshaw. No, he was not.
Well, like I said, he's probably saying it as a joke, but...
Maybe he was, but all the people that like to share that, like it's like their favorite weird fact. Your weird fact is meaningless. You know nothing.
So here's what it reminds
Feel
me
bad.
Of. Here's what it reminds me of. Where we live right now and where I'm from, Rulon Gardner is one of those guys. He came from here, so kind of put us on the map. The gold medal winner in Greco-Roman in 2000 and bronze medalist in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Has God's tried to kill him a half a dozen times and failed. My brother, he makes this same joke / hey, here's my claim to fame. He brings this up whenever Rulon comes. He goes, well, I beat him in high school. Which is true. Rulon was a freshman, and my brother was a senior, and I'm sure it was close, because the brother, I don't know that he was ever a varsity guy, but that's like one of those little weird, that's what it reminds me of, because he makes that joke all the time.
Right there with my braggadelic thing is that we played Adam Thielen's college, sophomore year, I want to say. And because I was the tallest guy on our scout team, I got to wear the Adam Thielen jersey. I was Adam Thielen for a whole week of practice.
That's right. So, yeah, technically these things are all true, but...
I am the same as Adam Thielen.
It's like I...
that should be your takeaway from this episode.
So, anyway, it reminds me of that. It's kind of funny. Hey, want to throw this out there. And again, we don't tend to do a lot of hyper-local stuff on our Unsportsmanlike, but I'm going to do it just for a minute because we have some time.
Mm-hmm.
Kid that I covered all the way through high school. See, that makes it sound like I had something to do with it, but I didn't.
Congratulations, Dad.
Peter Visser. He's a freshman at Weber State University.
Mm-hmm.
So he graduated from Star Valley High School here in the Valley in Afton. Not this last year, but the one before. And he just finished second in the U20 track and field, U.S. track and field championships.
Oh, nice.
So he is now on the world team, and he will be running in Columbia first week of August next month as part of the U20 U.S. track and field team. Pretty awesome.
He sounds like he's faster than me.
He is so fast. and here's the craziest part. So it's in the 3,000 meter steeplechase.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with what the steeplechase is?
I don't do track.
So the steeplechase is the one with the big giant hurdles and the water barriers.
Okay.
So you're running 3,000 meters, and every so often you got to jump over this thing and run through the water.
Mm-hmm.
Wyoming does not have the steeplechase. So Peter, in less than 2 years, has gone from... that's not a sanctioned sport where I went to high school to running and representing the United States in Columbia in that event. I think that is remarkable.
That is an insane amount of athleticism.
Well, and what's been fun about it is his coach here at Star Valley High School, Ty Draney, he's an ultra runner. He's won several ultra races and been in a ton more. But like they worked and built their own little custom steeple thing to practice with, which is just, I just think it's so interesting that here he is, one of the best for his age in the entire country, which based on the competition level in our country, you got to say in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that event was not a thing where he went to high school. It's just, I think it's remarkable. The only time he ever got to run it was when they had events in Utah. And he would run at like BYU invite, and then Weber State had one, which is where it's in Ogden, Utah, which mm-hmm. is where he committed. Anyway, I'm just bragging on Peter because I think that's amazing. It was cool. There's a cool, if you follow Ty Draney on Twitter, I do. He pointed out that like this, so he went and ran for Weber, and this took place in Eugene, Oregon, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we're talking track royalty. This is like a track palace. And you go and you do that well there. I think that's amazing, too. But anyway, in the weeks leading up to this, he was working with Ty after he had run in Eugene. And he knew he was going back to try for this.
Mm-hmm.
And Ty had tweeted out, I can't stay in front of him anyway. It was like Rocky. He's on a bike now. So he's like, I have to be on a bike to stay in front of Peter. Which I thought was pretty cool. Anyway, shout out, Peter. Shout out, Ty. Great job, guys. Amazing stuff. Look out for Peter Visser, first week of August, running in Santiago de la... de la Cali, Colombia. August 1st through the 6th is when that U20 thing happens. So if you want someone to cheer for him.
Oh, yeah. You got about halfway through the name of that city, and you started eyeballing this way.
I know.
I was never going to be able to help you with this.
Well, what's funny is all the writers were just referring to it as Cali, Colombia. And so I went and I Googled it and I looked it up because I wanted my version to be correct.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was the Santiago de la Car. It was different.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, how come you guys are just calling it Cali, Colombia or Cali, Colombia? Anyway, so I wrote the whole thing.
I bet he's going to get some great coffee while he's down there.
Maybe. I don't know. But really, really cool stuff. This little valley of ours, as small as we are, they've produced some cool, interesting things like that. Like Rulon Gardner, one of my classmates was a national champion in the high jump from Weber State, actually. Charlie Klinger, he's a lawyer now, which is, I think, even more amazing because he was like one of our class clowns and now he's a lawyer. Anyway, this cool stuff. Neat stuff. So we wish Peter the best of luck. And again, if you're looking for someone to cheer for, that first week of August. Go look for Peter Visser. Of course, you can also cheer for the guy who finished about 3.5 seconds in front of him from the Air Force Academy, Lentz. Bryce Lentz was his last name. So, obviously, Team USA, go guys. Go for you guys.
Yep. And one final thing we can close on here. I'm gonna hop into the professional wrestling landscape a little bit.
I would hope that you would.
Yes. Dal gets very excited when I talk about professional wrestling.
I'm in awe.
Yes.
All of my wrestling knowledge stopped at like 1990.
John Cena, who I would say is probably on, if you were going to make a Mount Rushmore of professional wrestling and its mainstream draw-in ability, John Cena would be up there.
Well, he's certainly super popular, you know, with his whole Peacemaker thing, which was a terrific series, by the way.
He celebrated last night on Raw. They did his 20 years of WWE,
wow.
John Cena.
20 years.
And it got me thinking about, I said, wow, I feel like Randy Orton just had 20 years too. And you look back on it, and one of the most interesting things, what a year 2002 was for professional wrestling, if anyone cares. So right now they have a show called NXT, which is their developmental brand, but they televise it. And by that, I mean when they sign new trainees, new this and that, that they think have potential, they put them on NXT, and they wrestle down there until WWE says, okay, you're ready for our big shows, now you can come up and wrestle on Raw and SmackDown, our primary big rating shows. Back in the day, they didn't televise the developmental. It was called OVW.
Right.
Ohio Valley Wrestling. Well, 2002, Stone Cold Steve Austin was heading out the door. The Rock was 1 year removed from going off to make his first movie, The Scorpion King, and he wasn't going to look back after that. So The Rock and Stone Cold were both gone. They were on their way out. They had 1 foot out the door. WWE said, oh, crap. How do we replace Stone Cold and The Rock?
You don't.
And in a move I can only count as God for some reason deciding that he had Vince McMahon's back.
He likes pro wrestling.
Yeah, I don't know why he would have done such a thing.
Yeah, but Vince McMahon's not a godly guy.
Vince McMahon has wrestled God on one occasion on pay-per-view.
Gross.
It's your fun fact of the day.
Did he win?
I think it was...
Or the draw.
No, it was a tag team match, him and Shane versus known reborn again Christian Shawn Michaels. And the storyline was they wanted to mock him. So they said, and your tag team partner will be God. And then they laugh. And then I think at one point, like halfway through the match, like the stadium lights went out and then like the ring collapsed and it made Vince McMahon fall over. So like they actually tried to play into it too. It's a little bit funny. Sacrilegious, but a little bit funny. Regardless of the nonsense, 2002, they said, well, our two biggest stars are heading out the door. What do we do about that? So they call up four dudes from OVW. And also, little known fact, Rey Mysterio in August will be celebrating 20 years.
I like Rey Mysterio.
He doesn't count in this because they signed him from WCW. So he had wrestled on television professionally before. Four guys that had never wrestled professionally on TV before, that they called up from OVW, some little rookies in 2002. Brock Lesnar was a rookie, so he's celebrating 20 years. John Cena, all right, not half bad. Randy Orton,
wow,
not too bad. And some dude who stars in Guardians of the Galaxy these days, Mr. Dave Bautista.
That was their four. Wow.
They found those four in their little OVW non-televised recruitment.
I think you call that a grand slam.
Like, well, we're going to lose The Rock and Stone Cold. That's a shame. Anyway, bring out the next superstars.
And they did. Wow. I mean,
a year 2002 was.
Say, talk about going 4 for 4. Pretty amazing.
It's a quality class there when arguably Batista is the worst member of it.
Yeah.
I mean, all right. So, I mean, good work WWE 20 years ago for hitting it. A shame you can never do that now for some reason.
Yeah.
Not sure where your eye for talent suddenly disappeared. Also, I find it hilarious. You want to talk about a guy who clearly is just built different from normal people? doesn't it feel like anytime a celebrity goes through some sort of scandal, their first instinct is I better go hide in my bunker until this all blows over and then hope everyone forgets? So Vince McMahon now has a lawsuit coming from an ex-referee. Mm-hmm. She was the first female referee who claims that back in the 80s, she was sexually harassed constantly by Vince McMahon. I don't disbelieve it.
I got to be honest with you. If someone brought that up, I'd be like, yeah.
We don't really need a trial for this.
He's guilty.
I can't believe there's anyone that's ever worked for him that isn't suing him for sexual harassment.
Yeah. But yeah, even that one time they stuffed his face into that guy's butt crack.
Remember that Vince writes these shows.
I know.
He said, by the way, hey, Paul, come over here. So, for tonight's main event, I'm thinking we're going to pull your singlet down and Triple H is going to shove my face up your butt. What do you think?
So here's the crazy thing about that. You can, I'm stealing this from John Oliver. You can fake a lot of things. But you can't really fake that.
Oh, speaking of that.
Anyway, going back to this.
Okay, so Vince McMahon,
he's
every single episode of Raw or SmackDown that has aired since that lawsuit began, he has personally opened every show by walking out saying, welcome to Raw or SmackDown. Thank you for all being in attendance today. All right, bye. Like, for no reason he comes out. He literally just comes out just to show his face. I'm like, what is this? This is the ballsiest thing I've ever seen.
Maybe it is.
He's just like, you know what? Yeah, I'm being sued for sexual harassment. What are you people going to do about it?
He is
somehow the most horrible person that has ever been the most interesting person on the planet.
I don't know about that. If we can remember the last, never mind, I'm not going to say it because I don't want to get all the hate, but just remember who the last president was.
I'm just saying. I don't know. Donald Trump.
People would argue is what I'm saying.
Donald Trump has some intrigue. I don't know that he has as many what on earth type of weird stories.
I bet he does.
And actually, Trump Towers has hosted 3 WrestleManias.
I was going to say,
they're good friends.
I think he's been in wrestling. He's been in wrestling once or yeah. They did the one like where he shaved Vince McMahon's head or something like that.
He's undefeated at WrestleMania.
Yeah. So, all right. On that note, butt cracks and hair shaving.
Oh yeah, we made sure we filled our time, ladies and gentlemen. So you can be sure to check us out every single Wednesday right here on either Spotify, YouTube, or svinews.com/podcasts. May I recommend that if you check us out on that third one, you peek around the website a little bit, check out all the other fun stuff we have written up. I think you can actually you can listen to some old sport broadcasts, too.
Yep, you can.
Yeah, make sure you check out all the Jackson ones.
No.
The play-by-play commentator.
No.
Sounds incredibly handsome. All right.
His name is Jake Nichols.
And with that, we'll see y'all next time.